This is an ABC podcast. Resorts, homes and a newly built hospital have been washed away.
I'm just holding on for dear life here. This isn't fun.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Save what for dream.
You must ready.
Helping your community.
Helping your family.
Helping you.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Mula, I'm Josiah Nanonga, based in Fiji.
Hi, I'm Fred Hooper, based in Australia, and this is Pacific Prepared.
It's a show all about natural disasters, climate change, and traditional knowledge, and how these things are all connected. And you'll hear that through stories from right across the Pacific.
Each week we work with local reporters. They're on the ground letting us all know what's happening in this space and what people want to hear about. On today's show, a real-life example of why inclusion is so important. A Papua New Guinea program looking at conservation is seeing differences and benefits of working with local women.
Also, a Fijian town facing an ongoing issue of flooding and the impact that is having on local businesses.
And breaking down the science of climate change and reminding people what it means for them and what they can actually do. That's all coming up. This is Pacific Prepared.
We need to be prepared for the future.
Helping you stay safe.
We have built a seawall 2 times, but it did no good.
What happens when something goes wrong and how do they respond to it?
Plan this time before disaster strike.
Every natural disaster gets worse.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Pacific prepared.
Let's think about inclusion for a second, Joe, and I guess why we do it, like the broader kind of context to it. It's probably to get a bigger picture of things, I suppose, ultimately. I guess men and women have very different strengths and both, you know, think very differently as well. I think we can probably agree to that as well. In this story, we're talking about more women being involved in conservation in Papua New Guinea. What sort of things, Joe, have you seen in terms of inclusion that have really worked in the spaces that you've worked in? So you've worked in Fiji, obviously, you've been to Tonga, right across the Pacific.
Yep.
Where do you think inclusion best works?
Right. Fred, this is really an interesting topic and something that needs to be considered in our society nowadays, especially in the Pacific settings or Pacific context, I would say, for that matter, because I would say the participation of women in certain activities at the community level were considered a taboo.
Oh, really?
Concept.
Really?
Yeah. They were considered a taboo. So they weren't supposed to be participating in certain activities at the community level. And, you know, a common phrase in the Pacific, it takes a village to raise a child. And for this matter, I would tweak it a bit and say that it takes a village to mitigate or to deal with the issue of climate change. That means the participation of the elders at our villages, the participation of church leaders, even the participation of women is critical to deal with this pressing issue.
Oh, for sure. I mean, you know, as you would know, climate change doesn't really discriminate. It affects everybody completely.
Absolutely.
So our Pacific Prepared's PNG-based reporter, Ben Kadoga, has been speaking to someone from the Sea Women in Melanesia. It's a not-for-profit organization, yeah. And they've been doing a lot of work around inclusion around the conservation space.
There's been so much pressure put on these marine ecosystems. And for that reason, the Sea Women of Melanesia started as a program looking at training women, because we saw that it is the woman where change is, change can happen. The Sea Women of Melanesia is passionate about training young women, giving them the tools, the training, the skills and resources that they need to carry out marine conservation in their local coastal communities, which we have been doing over the past 3 to 4 years. And so I'm based in Port Moresby. I'm with the Port Moresby team, and one of our project sites is based in Gabba Gabba. So with that mission or goal to train local women to take part in marine conservation is one of our focus, main focus. And that's, we have a team of about 2-3 directors who are all women, and our team at the moment, I'd say in all the three regions, is about 11 to 12 ladies working under the NGO itself.
What really inspired you and your team to form this particular group and to venture into conservation? Particularly, I understand your work surrounds conservation of coral reefs. I know most people want to know what your organization is doing, especially with the idea of, you know, women taking the lead in terms of conservation and more so zeroing down on coral reefs.
So we look at the marine biodiversity of coral reefs in the ocean. And when we look at these marine resources, especially the coral reefs, they have for so many, many years been used by our elders, our ancestors, past and present. And many of these resources have, over time, you know, they've changed. They're not the same anymore. And when we look at these marine or the coral reefs, it's really important that we begin to understand their cycles, how they have existed over time, whether it's still the same or has it changed. And there's so many factors that lead to the changes in these marine ecosystems. Because as we all know, all coastal villages rely heavily on these marine resources to provide them with food, medicine, you know, it's their daily income. And over time, there's been so much pressure put on these marine ecosystems. And for that reason, the Sea Women of Melanesia started as a program looking at training women, because we saw that it is the woman where change is, change can happen.
For those of you who've just joined in, you're listening to Go Ava, the director and public officer of the Sea Women in Melanesia, a not-for-profit organization based in Papua New Guinea.
Men do take the lead in the household in any society, especially in PNG. So, because men do all the work, ladies are also important. They support their husbands as leaders and men of the house. And, you know, there's a saying, men are the head, but the women are the neck. So, we believe that change is more effective when women help or take the lead. And in the space of marine conservation, like fishing and all that, it's an activity where the men carry it out. It's usually the low tides when the women go out and collect shells or sea urchins when the tide is low. And so we want to change that, you know, we want to flip the coin and empower these young women to take that challenge in the marine space and be able to take care of their reefs. So one reason behind how Sea Women was actually started was because of the intent of setting up a protected area. But at a national level, it's been regulated to some extent. And so we decided to take it to a more local level, a level where our coastal villages are able to take that ownership and step up and look after their coral reefs. Hence, we've Sea Women looks at helping that process by assisting local communities, protecting their reefs using the locally managed marine area perspective. So LMMA is what we call it.
That's a woman-run, not-for-profit organization dealing with the conservation of coral reefs. Why do you think it's important for everyone to, you know, conserve the coral reefs that we have in the country? And do you think there needs to be some policy changes in terms of assisting small organizations or international organizations, regional organizations, to help in conserving this very important marine biodiversity that we have in the country?
Definitely, yes. I think there needs to be more done. I know there are a lot of potential NGOs out there and other CBOs on the ground trying to make a change in marine conservation and protect maybe species or an area that needs to be protected. There needs to be more done. I've seen and attended some workshops that were held in PNG under SPREP's leadership, and I've seen that there is a much needed emphasis and much needed implementation in terms of marine conservation. And it all starts with working with the communities, what they want, what they see, because they know what's happening in the marine environment. They've seen it change over time. So these are the very people whom we should be sitting at the table with and, you know, guiding them through conservation efforts. But we should also understand that there are or have been practices in the past which is their traditional knowledge, and that's something that we can use and come up with co-management plans to better guide these conservation objectives. At the government level, there has been a lot of work done. I think what needs more to be strengthened is to get the people out there and carry out education and awareness, and communication is key in all aspects of work. And so the obvious answer to that is yes, PNG does need to do more in terms of marine conservation.
Thanks to our Pacific Prepared reporter based in Papua New Guinea, Ben Kadoga, for that story.
What's your plan? Are you ready to leave your home? Plan now before disaster strikes. Pacific Prepared.
All right, let's head off to Fiji now. Joe, obviously where you're located. Does the sound of rain sort of scare some people in Fiji? I mean, obviously it means at times flooding. Is that something that happens a bit in Fiji?
Yes, that's one of the major, you know, major issues. One of the major issues faced by Fijians, especially for those who reside in low-lying areas in times of heavy rain, even light rain. Fred, I would say that these areas would experience flooding.
People and get a bit nervous, do they? Or
Exactly. But good thing that they always, adhere to the warnings. Eh? So one little weather warning or flood update or flood warning issued by the relevant authorities, they act quickly. And I spoke with Mr. Sahil Nadan, the designated representatives of the BIMAS group of companies, the two major companies in Rakiraki that looks after the business operators within that particular town, who talked more on this issue.
Bulavinaka, my name is Sahil Nadan, and I am representing my dad, who is the director of a real estate company and a civil construction company located here in Rakiraki. BIMAS group of companies, we have been in existence for the past 80 years, and we are one of the major property developers here in Rakiraki at the moment.
Right. Rakiraki is one of the towns in Fiji making headlines over the past few years, especially during cyclone season. As it is, Fiji is still in cyclone season. Any little or small rain, Rakiraki will make it to the headlines. Flooding. Just talk about the nature of flooding here in Rakiraki over the past few years.
Yeah, flooding has really affected our business, especially our tenants' business in the short and long term as well. So during the months of January to February, April and March, it's really hard for the tenants. And as developers, we also find it really hard to negotiate with the tenants during this period, especially when there's a flooding season or cyclone season like TC Winston. All our tenants, you know, they will lose the business. And as such, we have to give them some subsidies, or we have to give them a grant. Okay, you can continue business and pay rent the following months and not the months in the natural disasters.
How has been the response like? Talk about the resilience of your shops or outlets here in Rakiraki after a disaster.
Well, as you must be knowing, there's a lot of chaos after a disaster, especially flooding that usually happens over here in Rakiraki. But I see that the people of Ra are very resilient to this. They don't want to give up and they want to continue business. And basically, I can say they don't want to relocate out of this CBD in the main Rakiraki town, because business as usual happens here and continues here. And flooding is just about 3 months, and the 9 months is just business.
Mm. Are there any talks with relevant authorities, government, public sector, or any, you know, non-government organizations that would render some form or sorts of assistance just to ensure that, you know, the rivers are drained or dredged or other mechanism in the pipeline to ensure this issue is kept at bay while we're still in cyclone season?
Well, yes, there had been talk with the past administration and past government, and of course they have done the dredging works, which has really been helpful. Otherwise, right. Before the dredging was actually done, the flooding levels were actually quite high.
Right.
As you must be remembering, around 2016 in December, the flooding levels were actually quite high here in Rakiraki town. So of course dredging works has been done, but still there is a plight going on with the current government. If they can continue with another dredging work so that, you know, the level can go down to a extent and not affect the businesses present over here. Well, the level of preparedness is always quite high. I would say that on a 365-day calendar, the level of preparedness is quite high for the 100 days, the first 100 days of an year. So, of course, the tenants over here and the people of Ra are quite prepared for a next flooding or cyclone, but they are more prepared when they have a accurate information from the news channels. Well, of course, during the time of any flooding or natural disaster, especially flooding, the market vendors suffer a lot. And after the natural disaster has passed away, then they have to carry on the cleaning and stuff like that. And it is really disheartening to watch them struggle, as they are always struggling every day in terms of selling their produce in the market. You can see during the normal times even they have their produce left there in the market. But in respect of the agricultural produce brought by them to the market, then during this flooding time, actually, the agricultural produce output is quite low, right? So since the produce is affected by the flood and stuff. And after the flooding has actually occurred 2 months in time, then the produce comes to a sustainable level.
Thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
And that was Mr. Sahil Nadan, the designated representative of BIMAS group of companies that looks after business operators in Rakiraki town here in Fiji.
I'm just holding on for dear life here.
For women, it's always safety first. They are the first responder.
You're listening to Pacific Prepared.
You might often hear about a report being released or some sort of data being released around climate change You probably hear that all the time,
right,
Joe.
That's right, Fred.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. As a journalist, though, and I think I've had a little bit of experience with this too, but as a journalist, Joe, how do you go trying to simplify some of that information, important information for audiences to understand? Because it can be quite confusing and complicated at times.
From my experience, probably 80% of the information, I would be able to simplify it in a manner or in a context or in a mode that would be better understood by people at the community level, especially being a radio announcer at the Fijian station. And you have to translate from English to an Ethiopian terms or Ethiopian language.
Well, Joe, this is sort of what our next story is about in some ways. It's about taking that information that obviously the reporters do as well and trying to create something that people feel like that they can use because it's obviously important to them. Pacific Prepared reporter Jeremy Guao spoke with Sharon Tohamai. She's the national coordinator for the Australia Pacific Climate Alumni Network.
We've recently conducted a training in Western Gizo, in Western Provinces. How can we support in terms of bridging the gap between the science of climate change and information that related to climate change to make it in a usable format that our people can understand and relate to? Because it's a reality that climate science is very technical and sometimes it's really hard for us to understand so that we can make informed decisions around what actions should we be doing around climate change. So I think with the work that we are doing with our partners, the Pacific Climate Change Center, which is based in Samoa with SPREP, and also our government through MECDM. This work is very critical in terms of how we can, you know, help our people to really understand, simplify this information, this science information, so that people can also relate it into our context. So for us, for me as a national coordinator and someone who works and here in Salt, but also seeing the evidence of what's already the impact of climate change on our people, I think it's really important to also see how the science can also merge or, you know, contribute to already existing knowledge that is out there in terms of our traditional knowledge here, because for us we really value that, and we, with the science of climate change, it's not meant that we are taking out the traditional knowledge that we have, but it's just you know, contributing to already existing knowledge that is out there. But the main goal is for us to enhance the capacity of our people to understand this information so that they can better make informed decisions, yeah, at the community level and even at all levels that they work on, mainly relating to, you know, climate actions and all those things. I think we have a lot of expert, but we also have a lot of knowledge within our communities. Like, I always value our traditional knowledge because that's the backbone, or that's where our people have been thriving all these times. Yeah, like our ancestors, for example, and even our grandparents have been using it. So I think it's a matter of looking at, with the modern, you know, all these projections around science and saying, like, you know, for example, in terms of, I could use an example around sea level rise projection, the climate projection. So when we want to use those to show it to our people, let's not use it in a way that it traumatizes them or it's actually like just make them frighten them. We should use those in a way that, you know, they can relate to it, but also they can help them make informed decision. I think that's the important bit. Yeah. So it's more about, I mean, the knowledge brokerage work is more about you being the middle person, passing that. So it's all about you as a knowledge broker. Like, you also need to be aware of what's out there, what's the science, how you can use the science as well as the traditional knowledge that our people already have to help them just contribute to their resilience building efforts. We don't do our work individually, like as a network. We really, our strength is with our partners. So that's how we you know, we bridge the gap. We either work with our NGOs or we either work with individuals within the organization who are doing this work. So we, I think so, like, for example, in Gizo, we support this network so that they are the ones who actually go down to the communities to do the work. So it's not necessarily like we actually go to the communities, but it's mainly around building the human resources, the capacity, so that these people are the ones that, you know, go down there and do really work with our communities. So that's a good example for Western Province. So we help them with tools around systems thinking. Like, when you think about climate change, you don't only think about it as a standalone issue, but you also look at the health issues. You also look at the resources that people rely on. So you take it as a holistic way. Yeah? So that's an example of a tool that we also help them, that we also train our partners in, so that when they do the implementation or when they go out to the communities, they look overall, like, around, you know, all these issues. It's not just the climate change issues, but things that contribute to increasing or exacerbating the vulnerabilities of our people. Eh? Because sometimes, not sometimes, climate change is cross-cutting, but also other issues are already existing. Eh? So I think that's an example of how we use this space to build the capacities of our network members, because they are the ones who actually go there. For me, for the network, we don't really, like, you know, go down to the community level. It's just us trying to support the professional development with the aim that these people actually, you know, do the work. I mean, they are the ones who really work with the communities, and yeah. So once they better capacitated with these tools, with this, you know, new knowledge that they have, then we assume that they actually go down and then, yeah, pass on that to the communities that they work with.
Thanks to Pacific Prepared reporter Jeremy Guo for that story from the Solomon Islands.
Disaster is part of our life, and recovering is also part of our life.
As you see, they're smiling despite the devastation. That's how we are.
You are listening to Pacific Prepared.
Well, Fred, it was a very interesting and insightful information shared to our listeners about the involvement of women in conservation initiatives, flooding in Fiji, and coming down to the need of, disseminating and simplifying information, scientific information, to be better understood by people at the community level. I really like it.
We covered a lot of bases, Joe.
Yeah. And I really look forward to what more in store for our listeners coming up next week. Talk to you then.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate it. Vanaka.
Vanaka.
This show was made on the lands of the peoples of Stony Creek Nation in Lutruwita, Tasmania. Also the people of the Vanua Uviti. Pacific Prepared is supported with funding from the Australian Government's Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade. Any views expressed do not necessarily represent those of the Australian Government. It's produced and distributed in partnership with Radio Australia and networks across the Pacific, including Radio New Zealand Pacific, National Broadcasting Corporation of Papua New Guinea, Palau Wave Radio, Fijian Broadcasting Corporation, Samoa National Radio 2AP, Solomon Islands Broadcasting Corporation, and Tonga Broadcasting Commission. My name's Fred Hooper, and thanks to my co-host in Fiji, Josina Nunga. Please share any information you've learned today, and stay safe. This has been Pacific Prepared.